We'll hear arguments first this morning in number 482, Robert K. Smith against the Daily Mail Publishing Company. Mr. Hanley, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, if it please the court, this is a case in which on February 9, 1978, a shooting occurred in the city of St. Albans, West Virginia. That's about 12 miles from Charleston, the capital city. And it's in a metropolitan area there in West Virginia, if you can call it that, of about 250,000 people. And a 14-year-old boy was apprehended and taken into custody. Later on that day, a juvenile hearing was held, and he was declared a delinquent under our West Virginia law. It's against the statute of West Virginia for a newspaper to print the name of a juvenile who is under arrest or pending a hearing. On the next day, on February 10th, the Charleston Gazette, a statewide newspaper in West Virginia, published the name of the juvenile on the front page along with a picture, and also in an editorial made comment that they were deliberately doing this. The Gazette, then the Daily Mail, an afternoon newspaper, published the name that afternoon. Both of these newspapers, along with the editors and reporters, were indicted by a Kanawha County grand jury later on in the month. Before trial could be had, the newspapers sought prohibition in the Supreme Court of West Virginia, and a rule was issued on both newspapers. Separate rules were issued on both newspapers, putting the case before our Supreme Court for argument. The cases were then consolidated for argument, and I want to point out to the court mainly today that these cases, the fact situations are different. In the Gazette case, they alleged in their petition that it was already common knowledge when they printed this juvenile's name. In the answer of the state, it was denied that this was so. The Gazette newspaper then demurred to the answer. So for all practical purposes, they were then saying, for the purpose of this case, it was not common knowledge, and the information was not obtained from any other source, from a hearing, or from a assistant prosecuting attorney, which I noted in the brief, it now says that it's in the prosecuting attorney. So the bare issue then is whether a newspaper may print the name of a juvenile when they sought the information and obtained it on their own.
The statute doesn't make any distinction between a case where it's common knowledge and one where it is not, does it?
No, Your Honor. However,
it's a criminal statute, isn't it?
Yes, sir. However, I wanted to point that out because of the past case law of this court indicating where the information is obtained by court records, as in the Cox case, where the information is obtained at a public hearing, in the Nebraska case, or when the information is obtained in a closed hearing, where the court allowed the news press in, that would make a big distinction. So what I'm saying to the court, this is a case now of first impression. And it's not a case of fitting in with the Cox or Nebraska or the Oklahoma case. If the case fits in with anything, it fits in with the Virgin Island case. Of course, that's our contention. This is the reasoning in the Virgin Island case should be adopted by this court.
General Hanley, just so I'm sure I understand your point, Is it your view that there is no claim, is there, that the newspaper violated any law in obtaining the information?
No, Your Honor. Absolutely not. No. We're not contending they violated any law in obtaining it. All we're saying is they printed it. We are saying, what I was trying to say, is that the information was not obtained in a court hearing or court record, as in the Cox, Nebraska, or Oklahoma cases.
But it was obtained.
Yes, it was, by their, let's say, their own investigation and so forth.
The statute doesn't care how you
know. No, sir. The statute doesn't care.
Why is that material?
It's material because this court has held in the past, or we say it's material.
Well, was it in the case that we were, the other side was attacking a statute like this one?
No, sir. The case, the court in those cases.
It seems to me the only thing we need in this case is that the newspaper published the name of a juvenile.
Yes, sir.
What else do we need?
You don't need anything.
Besides unconstitutional statute.
I'm saying, Your Honor, that you don't need anything.
We don't need more facts, do we?
No, sir. That's
all
what
we
I'm
need now is law.
Yes, sir.
Which you're getting ready to get to.
Hopefully.
Well, that's what I quit.
We're asking this court to adopt the reasoning, at least, in the Virgin Island case, where they balance the right of a juvenile as against the First Amendment rights of a newspaper and upheld the rights of the juvenile. When we speak of freedom of the press, I wonder what are we saying? What are we speaking of? I say it's the right of an editor that owns a newspaper or the owner of a newspaper to print almost anything he wants to. And the only recourse that anyone has is if it's a private person by a libel suit. And since the Sullivan case, New York Times versus Sullivan, it's pretty hard. This court has a check and balance as against the legislative branch of government, as against the executive branch of government. But how far is this court going to go to protect the rights of a newspaper in the First Amendment? We say that it's going too far to say that the country must be in dire need or war or something of that kind. And we're saying that this Cox case and these later cases of this court indicate that they don't intend to go that far.
Mr. Henley, let me help me out a little bit. What are the state interests that are being served?
The state interests that are being served are to protect juveniles.
Well, then my next question is, why are radio and television excluded from the coverage of your statute?
Your Honor, it's excluded because that is regulated by the federal government. The FCC regulates them, and I can point an analogy to that. In our state, if a person files and runs for office, and an advertisement is placed in a newspaper, it's against the law not to say who paid for the ad. But it doesn't say anything about radio or television. However, the FCC controls that and will not let them place an ad without telling who paid for it.
Well, is this a matter of regulation as much as it is just the imposition of a criminal statute? Let me put it another way. Do you think there's a prior restraint involved here?
Your Honor, we're saying that if there is a prior restraint, the rights of the juvenile should be balanced ahead of such restraint, and the rights of the juvenile should be protected.
You're conceding that there might be a prior restraint, then?
Yes, sir, I am.
Well, the statute is a threat, is it not?
Well, if you compare it, for instance, with the Landmark case...
Well, any statute is a threat.
I would say it would be a prior restraint.
Oh, a libel statute is a threat.
That doesn't prevent anyone from publishing something libelous. He's liable, then, if he does.
Well, that's true, Your Honor.
I know that your opposition takes the position it's a prior restraint. Maybe I should ask him.
Well, I have been confused in the frankly, have been confused in reading the cases on prior restraint. For instance, the landmark case, it says that's not a prior restraint. That's my reading of it. And I want to mention that case.
Well, doesn't that landmark help or hinder you?
Well, of course, the opposition is going to say it hinders me. But what I'm saying is that case was attempting to protect the judiciary. And this court said that the judiciary does not need protecting, and that the people are entitled to know what the judiciary is doing. And what I'm saying is juveniles, it's a separate thing all over this country. Most states have some method and some statutes to protect juveniles and to rehabilitate them and not to treat them as criminals.
Well, I'm not in opposition to you particularly, but the other side of that coin is that the public has a right to know who's committing crimes around.
Well, of course, the newspaper is not clearly prohibited. They can print all about the incident. They want to. They just can't print the name. And I might say the flagrancy and deliberateness and arrogance that was demonstrated in this editorial would show how far the newspaper will go if somebody doesn't do something to balance it out.
Well, they don't amend the Constitution. Had to do something.
Well, Your Honor, I think it's a question of interpretation. And I think this court has not decided that question, because this court also thought that maybe it would be going too far to just say a prior restraint is forbidden absolutely.
Well, in a constitutional sense, does the public have a right to know anything as individuals that, say, a newspaper or television station doesn't choose to print, or that their neighbors don't choose to tell them?
Well, of course, when the newspaper don't choose to print it, they won't do it. I don't know about that part of it, Your Honor, but it's just a question if you want to protect the juveniles. And most of the thinking throughout the country is that we do.
Is it against the law in your state for a police officer or a judge to tell the press who committed a crime?
Your Honor, the statute provides. I was going to get to that. The statute provides that the judge may allow the newspaper to print it. In other words,
quite what I asked you. Say, is it against the law for a police officer or a judge to tell the press who committed the crime?
No, sir, absolutely not.
But you say that no matter how the press learns it, the statute would apply.
No, I don't, Your Honor, because
absent an order permitting the publication.
No, I don't, Your Honor, because from the prior cases of this court.
Well, yeah, but that would be, all you're saying is that the statute would be invalid if it was applied. But the statute on its face seems to cover the.
Yes, that's true. That's absolutely true. And this court has not struck a statute as such down as yet in that regard.
To what extent, if you do rely, on the fact that step by step. Criminal conduct of juveniles has been treated by the courts in terms of procedure and prosecution to be more and more like the prosecution of adult crime, except for a jury and a few other factors.
Well, Your Honor, I would answer that by saying this. I think that the court is giving a juvenile double protection. They are giving them the same rights as an adult, and also the rights of a juvenile. Not just giving them the rights of an adult and taking away the rights of a juvenile, but now they receive both rights. The right to be treated as a juvenile and also have the same rights as an adult have an attorney and given their rights and so forth. In this particular case, this juvenile has not been tried yet. For this alleged crime. It's my understanding that he has a good defense to this alleged act of murder. He has not had a chance to have his day in court as yet.
Is that the newspaper's fault?
No, it's not the newspaper.
Why are we interested in that point?
Well, I just wanted to point it out that he hasn't...
He wanted to draw the influence that the newspapers are holding this case up?
Well, it didn't help it any, Your Honor.
I thought you'd want to drop a little on the newspapers, didn't you?
Yes, sir. That's...
I don't see how we can.
No, you can't, but...
Why don't we argue the law in this case instead of all these extraneous matters? I mean, in all deference, you say this is the first case of this kind.
Yes, sir.
It involves the First Amendment, which is important.
Yes, sir.
So why don't we get to the law? That's all this is.
Well, Your Honor, then, as far as the law is concerned, I think the reasoning in the Virgin Island case fits this case on all fours. That and the court in that case indicated that the balance, the right to preserve...
Did that case say that the radio, the television, and everybody else could print it but the newspaper?
No, sir, but, Your Honor...
Well, isn't that one of the points that's before us?
No, that's not before you. I say that's not before you. The 14th Amendment is not in this case because it wasn't decided in the court below. That's brought up for the first time up here.
You don't agree that we can uphold the court on any ground?
Well, I would suggest that possibly.
Of course, if we affirm on the First Amendment, we don't have to get to the 14th. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
But if we don't affirm on the first, can't we get to the 14th?
I would suggest and argue that I don't think the court should get to the 14th.
I said could.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
General Hanley, on that point, you say that the explanation of the exclusion for radio and TV is that they're regulated by the Federal Communications Commission.
Yes, sir.
Is there a federal regulation that prohibits them from publishing the name of juveniles?
Your Honor, yes, there is. There's a federal statute that prohibits publishing a juvenile's name, just like the statute in West Virginia.
But in practical effect, you say they really are, all the media are treated the same, but if you look at the entire statute...
As far as the federal statute is concerned, yes, sir. I don't want to misrepresent. There is a federal statute. That is, I assume that means that if there is a federal law violated by a juvenile, they cannot print his name. The press, nor the media, nor any of the media.
What about speaking?
That's a federal law, Your Honor.
I misunderstood. If a juvenile violates a state law, can they publish it on the radio?
As far as the state statute, yes, but
no, sir. As far as the federal statute,
I don't know whether there's any. I don't think there is a regulation against it.
There's only
but they can regulate it, and I don't think that it'd be proper for the state to regulate the TV and radio. I don't think that there's no case that I could find where that's been determined, but there certainly is a federal statute preventing a juvenile, so it indicates the federal government thinks that they can protect a juvenile.
You think that federal statute
is
which one?
It's on page 31 of
which one?
Respondent's brief in the footnote.
In operative effect, Mr. Hanley, the statute gives the judge the opportunity to, gives the judge the power to decide whether there shall be or shall not be publication. Isn't that true?
Yes, Your Honor. And I think that the in past years they have done that right along as sort of routine, but I don't know. But
then what happens to the underlying... What happens to the underlying proposition that the juvenile must be protected for even from public knowledge when the judge can waive it? The judge could waive it theoretically in every case, couldn't he?
Yes, he could, Your Honor.
And that would mean that the particular judge could wipe out the statute if he wanted to.
Yes, but under the known old most juvenile laws, the judge was considered the parent's patre of the child, and we assume that the judge would do a better job than some newspaper or some stranger and be acquainted with these things, with these matters.
Do you happen to know when the West Virginia statute was passed?
Not offhand, Ron. I think it's been on the books about 30 years. It's been at least that long. I think I read one of the Meekus briefs, and it indicated that it was a 40-year statute. Thank you.
Very well, Mr. Abrams.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, I'd like to respond very briefly to one or two questions which were asked of General Hanley before proceeding to my argument. The statute was adopted in 1915 in West Virginia. It is 64 years old. So far as we know, this is the first prosecution under it against any newspaper.
So its limitation to the press is... fully explainable just by the...
Yes, sir. It was adopted at a time when
At a time when there was no television and very little radio.
And at a time when the First Amendment did not apply to the states as well. The statutory language as of 1915 is very similar to what it is today. It said, nor shall the name of any child in connection with any proceeding under this act be published in any newspaper without a written order of the court. I should like to proceed first to the question of whether this statute is indeed a prior restraint. As I understand General Hanley, he has conceded, or all but conceded, that it is, but I think it is a matter which is for the court to decide, of course. It is not a prior restraint because it is a threat. All criminal statutes directed at the press are threats. The landmark statute was a threat, and it was not a prior restraint. It is a prior restraint, in our view, because the essence of it and the essence of the crime alleged here is that you must seek written permission of the judge before you can print the name of the child. That, in our view, is what makes it a prior restraint.
Would it be a different situation if that exception were not provided in the statute?
Yes, it would, Mr. Justice Blackmun. It would not be a prior restraint statute, in our view, then. It would be a straight subsequent punishment, a criminal statute, to be judged as you judge against First Amendment interests and First Amendment claims, criminal statutes which affect or directly implicate the rights of the press.
So an even more rigorous prohibition would not be a prior restraint?
That is often the case in terms of licensing statutes. If instead of a licensing statute, Mr. Justice Rehnquist, you had a flat ban on any kind of publication, I dare say it would likely be unconstitutional, but it wouldn't be a prior restraint. And the fact that the essence of this crime, as alleged, and as the essence of this a misdemeanor, which can lead to six-month jail sentences here, is not obtaining the permission of the court and printing without that permission, in our view, makes this a prior restraint in a far more classic sense than most of the prior restraint cases which this court has had in recent years, far more than Pentagon Papers or the Nebraska Press Association case, far more than NEAR itself.
And yet, if the paper here had simply chosen to abide the statute and not seek permission and say were prohibited, as the editorial indicated they were, from publishing, it would have the same effect as a criminal statute and not be a prior restraint.
On the particular facts of this case, I think the paper would have been able to defend, and indeed if this criminal case proceeds, would be able to defend on the grounds that permission wasn't needed. But the essence, as I understand it, or one of the things that's wrong with prior restraints, as I understand it, is that it establishes a censorial authority with a relationship to the censored entity, which is one of the things that this court has indicated it doesn't like, or that it's particularly loath to accept in prior restraint statutes. Now, I appreciate the fact that it is on its face anomalous to say that because there is this provision in the statute, which says that you can go to a court and get permission, that makes it a prior restraint. But in our view, that is always what licensing statutes have. It is precisely that provision which brings into account the essential prior restraint relationship of the censor to the party who is doing the censoring.
Sure,
that you have to go and ask permission.
You would concede, or you would, I suppose, assert, would you not, that the even in the absence of this provision for judicial authority to publish, that the statute would be equally unconstitutional.
Oh, absolutely, Mr. Stewart.
So what difference does it make, what we label it?
It only makes a difference in terms of how you choose to analyze it, and it seems to me that the statute is so clearly unconstitutional for a variety of reasons, but whether or not it is a prior restraint or a subsequent punishment statute, it would be just as unconstitutional.
But you can read some of our cases indicating that a prior restraint is the most onerous of all prohibitions against publication. And I take it from your answer to my brother Stewart and my own question that that isn't necessarily the case.
No.
That's just Rehnquist.
The most draconic.
Prior restraints, by their nature, are the most draconic restraints upon speech. That doesn't mean that a subsequent punishment statute in a particular case doesn't fall on speech with even greater brutality. Professor Chaffee once wrote that if there were capital punishment for the advocacy of socialism, that would have a pretty chilling effect. And I have no doubt that that would have more of a chilling effect on advocacy of socialism than this prior restraint statute would. All I'm saying is that you do have an established body of law about how to view prior restraints. It is our view that this is a prior restraint statute and that that body of law ought to be the overview with which you look at the statute.
But prior restraint statutes aren't the most severe repressions of publication.
Prior restraint statutes, this Court has indicated time and again, are to be viewed with the particular harshness by this Court to see if there is an exception which allows the statute to stand. That this Court has indicated, as I understand, all its prior restraint rulings, that prior restraints are presumptively unconstitutional, unlike other statutes, that prior restraints bear a heavy burden, unlike certain other statutes. As Justice Stewart suggests, I don't have to persuade you, I think, that it is a prior restraint, but if it is, it seems to me that your cases lead you to analyze the legal questions in a somewhat different way.
Why wouldn't a flat ban be even worse?
A flat ban may be even worse, just as a flat ban on publication of all literature by the King of England would have been worse than sending people to the censorial authority to get permission to print. Nonetheless, we have a body of law which says that prior restraints, because of the effects that they have, are particularly, presumptively, unconstitutional.
Mr. Abrams, I noticed that you put, or at least you appear to put, a good deal of weight on the fact that between 1960 and 1975, as we all know, there's been an enormous increase in juvenile crime, and serious violent crime. Now, suppose the statistics were the other way. Suppose it showed that juvenile crime was going down. Would it make any difference to your constitutional point?
No, it would not, Mr. Chief Justice. I simply indicated that to indicate to you why the press might want to print. It's a matter of information for the Court, but that is not at the heart of our argument.
It really is irrelevant, isn't it?
It is irrelevant as to the legal position.
The constitutional question.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It is simply suggestive to you since I thought you...
Explains your interest. No, you're not your interest.
That's correct.
Interest.
And that's the only reason that it's there. Entirely aside from the question, if it is a question of whether this is a prior restraint and must meet those harsh standards, it's our view that this statute cannot meet any First Amendment test. This Court has indicated, it seems to us, with ever greater clarity in recent years, the proposition articulated last term by the Chief Justice in the Hutchins versus KQED case, that the government may not restrain communications of whatever information the media acquires and which they elect to reveal. That proposition, reflected in opinions such as Tornello and a variety of others by this Court, is, in our view, flatly inconsistent with the statute which bars and makes criminal precisely the publication of what the press has learned and chooses to print. It is a core First Amendment interest, in our view, which cannot give way even to societal interests at least as great as those which are asserted here. The fact of the matter is that under this statute, as General Hanley has conceded, it doesn't make any difference how the press learns the information. It doesn't make any difference that in this case, for example, on what I take to be the admitted facts of this case, that this was a killing in a public school in which there were 7 eyewitnesses, and that entirely aside from the question of who gave the information to the press, and on this record I think it is admitted that the information came from police authorities, that this community was filled with eyewitnesses that knew what happened there. General Hanley rightly and candidly concedes to you that that makes no difference, that the statute still applies. Well, it seems to us that to put that kind of onus on the press, to say that there will be no punishment of the police, to say that the statute doesn't even apply to the police, but to say that there will be no punishment of anyone else and no other effort made of a meaningful sort, not even an effort made if this state interest is so great, to ban magazines, let alone newspapers, let alone radio and television, but to ban individuals from repeating these things.
Radio and television, you think the general is relying on, applies to federal juvenile.
Yes, the statute cited.
That's all it applies to. It doesn't apply to state.
Yeah, so the libel law, of course, is the one example where...
No, but I'm talking about this one that says you can't publish...
That's right. That statute has no application whatsoever to the state.
It applies to a federal juvenile hearing and not a state hearing.
That is correct, Mr. Justice Marshall. It has nothing to do with a state prosecution.
How does it bear, if at all, on your case that... The tendency over the last dozen years, more or less, has been to assimilate the procedure for juvenile prosecutions, if they're to be called that, juvenile procedures, to the full panoply of criminal procedures.
If anything, Mr. Chief Justice, it suggests that there is perhaps less need for this kind of special, unique protection for juveniles. Now, that is not an argument that we have made in our brief to you, but to the extent that it is relevant at all that this court has in recent years, with the exception of jury trial, extended a wide variety of rights to juveniles on the theory that they are entitled to same treatment constitutionally as adults, it doesn't seem to us that it can cut against us in any event.
Would that be a consideration primarily for the legislature rather than for judges?
I think that consideration is for legislatures. But when you balance against a First Amendment interest, as we view it as pristine as this, the right of the juvenile involved here, what is said to be the right of the juvenile involved here, we don't think that comes out very, very close as a matter of law. We cite to you, for example, your own decision in Davis versus Alaska, in which this court came to consider the rights of the juvenile to confidentiality of his juvenile criminal record as against the Sixth Amendment rights of confrontation of a party accused of a crime. And in that case, Alaska had put a juvenile on the stand, so far as the case reads, without the consent, without any waiver by the juvenile, put him on the stand, and this court held that testimony must be permitted as to his prior juvenile record. And even though temporary embarrassment might result to the juvenile and his family, the court said, the Sixth Amendment right of the defendant in that case, triumph had to prevail over the right of the juvenile. Well, we would think that by any kind of equitable treatment of First Amendment rights, that at least the same ruling ought to apply here. In the Nebraska case, and the ruling of the court was that the court would not choose between First and Sixth Amendment rights, would not put one above the other. If that is so, we think at the very least that the First Amendment is entitled to as much regard in this context as the Sixth Amendment was given in the Alaska case. There are two additional factors which I'd like to mention. One is that the statute simply cannot work. Assuming that the First Amendment law were less clear than we think it is, one would in any event look to the question of what this statute is going to do. What will it accomplish? Assuming the court were even to engage in a kind of ad hoc balancing test, well, which we would strongly disapprove, the statute simply cannot accomplish the end of leading to rehabilitation for juveniles or the like. How could it, when it is so under-inclusive, not only to exclude radio and television, to include magazines, to include everything in the world, including private conversations, except newspaper publication?
But doesn't a newspaper morgue have a particular significance, say, 10 years after the event? The state can close the juvenile record, but some reporter can go into a newspaper morgue 10 years later and say, so-and-so, age 25, was proceeded against as a juvenile 10 years ago. The proceedings against him were dismissed, and because of the story was reported in the newspaper, and that would be the only source of information he would have.
Well, that is possible, Mr. Justice Rehnquist. I think it's fair to say that even to the extent that that is considered a distinguishing factor of newspapers, although not, I think, of magazines, for example, which also have indexes, West Virginia can't control what out-of-state newspapers publish about materials such as this. I take it they can't, and I read the Nebraska case to indicate that they cannot. Therefore, they couldn't even affect all the newspapers, even if they wanted to deal with newspapers as a discrete class. And as I've suggested already, this case is illustrative. The facts of this case, it seems to me, are illustrative of why this statute can't work. We will not rely, as Justice Marshall indicated earlier, on the facts of this case. The statute, in our view, is facially unconstitutional. But this killing occurred in a community of 14,000 people. It occurred in a junior high school, the only junior high school in town. It occurred in front of at least 7 eyewitnesses. Everybody in that community knows about this, and everybody knew about it. To think that a statute can pass constitutional muster where the interest that it is promoting is that of protecting the right of the juvenile for what? Against the publicity or for rehabilitation later on. But everybody in his community knows exactly what happened to him.
Well, suppose, Mr. Abrams, that there weren't 7 eyewitnesses, indeed no eyewitnesses, and that he was apprehended on circumstantial evidence. Would it make any difference to your constitutional issue?
The constitutional issue, no, and that's why I indicated that, as in the Nebraska case, this is simply illustrative of the functioning of the statute. The constitutional argument remains precisely the same. Whether or not anybody knows about it in any particular case, it seems to us that this statute, which punishes speech, which is, in our view, a prior restraint as well on speech and on the press, cannot pass muster. But that one of the reasons it can't is the reason that the court indicated in the Nebraska Press Association case, in which the court said that a whole community cannot be restrained from discussing a subject intimately affecting life within it. There's a final point. There are other means, and West Virginia has sought out some of them to accomplish this end. Legislation against discrimination in employment against people with juvenile records is on the books in West Virginia, and it was at the time of this alleged crime. Legislation which would, at that time, 1977, destroy arrest records was in effect in West Virginia at that time. There are a wide variety of other means, and of course the most obvious one that comes to mind is the one which General Hanley has indicated West Virginia does not have, and that is prosecution against public officials who release information of this sort.
Of course, the destruction of arrest records legislation isn't going to be very useful if a person can go to the newspaper morgue and find out the fact of arrests from that.
That is true, Mr. Justice Rehnquist, but the destruction of arrest records, which has its own panoply of constitutional problems, which I'm not reaching here, but is one way, taken in conjunction with other ways, that the state can attempt to assure that a juvenile will be protected from the effects of whatever crime he is accused of. It is not a totally successful way any more than anything else could be in a situation where anybody can know what happened and anybody can know in any case whether a juvenile did something or what he didn't do. It is relevant, I think, as it was in Landmark, that the approach taken by West Virginia here is one of a very small minority of states. As our brief points out, West Virginia is one of only 6 states which purports to impose criminal punishments on the press for its publication of information of this sort. Just last month, after our briefs were submitted to this court, the American Bar Association adopted the recommendations of the Juvenile Justice Standards Project, of the Institute for Judicial Administration, and of the ABA itself.
That didn't constitute a constitutional amendment.
No, sir. The conclusion that they reached...
You don't know yet.
That's right. was that there were alternative ways to do this, and what they recommended was essentially greater control over files held in the juvenile court system. I don't suggest for a moment that control over files would have kept this information from coming out. As it happens, the fact of this case was such that everybody knew, well, it happened anyway. But the position of the ABA is also the position, as our brief indicates, of a wide range of other entities.
Well, we had a case out here not long ago in Vienna where there was a family killing, and there was no doubt as to who was apprehended for juvenile proceedings, but the press was very unhappy, and presumably other people may have been unhappy. They were simply unable to find out about what transpired at the closed juvenile hearing. Would your argument extend that far?
No, we make no argument to you today with respect to any right of press access to closed juvenile hearings. That raises entirely different issues, and that is neither how this information was obtained, nor is it an argument that we are making in this case at all. We have not taken the position in this case that the press is entitled to access to closed juvenile proceedings.
Abrams, yes. Going back to the ABA, recommendation, is it your view that a statute making it a crime for a court aide of some kind, a clerk or something like that, to reveal information like this would be constitutional? You're suggesting...
It is my view that it would be constitutional for a statute to impose criminal penalties on those within the judicial system itself. Yes, sir.
And that would apply to, say, also prohibition against the police for revealing the information.
Yes, sir.
That issue wasn't presented in the landmark case, was it?
That was not presented, no.
Suppose this picture that's in the appendix had been published without the name. Would that be a violation of the statute? Would it be the functional equivalent of identifying the juvenile defendant?
I suppose... I would think it, that while it would obviously carry a lot of the same effect, it would not be the, quote, name, unquote. I would think the statute would not apply. I would think you'd have to read the criminal statute narrowly so as to avoid other constitutional problems. And I would think that if the picture were published that without a name, that would not constitute a violation of the statute. I would point out in conclusion that what this case pits against each other is, on the one hand, First Amendment interests, which we think are long recognized by this court as being at the apex of First Amendment protections. The ban on prior restraints, as we view it, the freedom of the press to print news within its possession, the protection of truthful speech about public events, against another societal interest. Non-constitutional in nature. There's no suggestion here in this case, nor as I understand it, in any ruling of this court, that the right to confidentiality imposed by a statute of this sort is of constitutional magnitude. Speculative. There is nothing in this record, or so far as we know in the literature, to suggest that a statute of this sort is even needed to lead to the societal result which is sought here. Incapable of fulfillment by this statute because of its under-inclusiveness and because in any event the information, as in this case, is often widely known.
Can I go back once more to the ABA problem?
Yes.
I take it the statute could not prohibit a victim or a family of a victim from telling the press who the young man under suspicion was.
I don't believe that would be constitutional.
So isn't it always going to be true that the information would be obtainable, probably? Potentially available.
It would always be potentially available, yes. Yes. I have nothing else, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Do you have anything further, Mr. Hanley?
Yes, sir. I'd just like to make point out a few things. If Your Honor's please, regardless of whether this is considered a prior restraint or not, I'm not conceding that it is or it isn't. All I'm saying is that I'm asking this court to follow the view and the reasoning in the Virgin Island case. In that case, they said it was a prior restraint, but they said that the rights of the juvenile outweighed the First Amendment. Counsel has brought up again
the fact that this was common knowledge, and I'm requesting the court to consider only the petition and pleadings in the Gazette case, because this case was consolidated under two separate sets of facts. The Daily Mail obtained more facts, I suppose, because they printed later. But in the Gazette case, their petition says that they obtained the knowledge from a policeman. And I imagine that's so, but we don't concede for a minute that this was common knowledge. And this place where the shooting occurred is about 13 miles from Charleston. That is one big metropolitan area.
Well, Donald, even if it was common knowledge, the statute would cover it, I think.
Well, if it was common knowledge out there, it wouldn't be common knowledge in a community, which is Charleston. And that's where the boy's going to
well,
be tried.
Wherever it was common knowledge, if it was common knowledge in Charleston or anywhere else, the statute would forbid the publication.
Yes, but we do not concede
that. And to that extent, the statute is at the very minimum would be overbroad, I think.
Pardon, Your Honor?
Would you say that a statute may validly forbid the publication of a juvenile's name where the name is common knowledge in the community?
I think it could, yes, but mm-hmm. We don't concede that it was common knowledge at all. And there's no evidence taken here. That's my point. There's been no evidence taken in this case. And yet counsel for the other side says it's common knowledge and they got the information here and got the information there. We don't concede that, and if the court reads the pleading...
I understand.
Yes, sir. In the Cox case, this court said, we reaffirm that the guarantees, that's the First Amendment guarantees, are not an absolute prohibition under all circumstances, but the barriers to prior restraint remain high, and the presumption against its use continues intact. Well, we concede that, but we're saying that this is a barrier. This is the, under the holding of the Virgin Allen case, it's important. This court could destroy the whole juvenile system throughout the country if it doesn't protect the juvenile in this instance.
How many all throughout the country? I thought there were only five or six states that had this thing.
Well,
how can you say that that would affect the whole country?
For this reason, Your Honor, I'm not talking about a similar type statute. I'm talking about juvenile programs.
The only thing we have before us is this statute, right?
Yes, sir. The federal act goes to all media. I just read it.
It applies to federal cases.
Only, yes, sir. Federal cases only.
What relation does that have to this case?
In this regard, Your Honor, it's an analogy. If the federal government can do it, why couldn't the state government do it? That's the only reason it would apply.
I don't know whether the federal government can do it or not. And I won't be able to know until a case involving it comes in.
Well.
But this one is in.
Yes, sir, and we are arguing that as an analogy, at least, we urge the court to consider the Virgin Allen ruling and holding in that case. Thank you very much.
General Henley, just a matter of curiosity, what's there to happen to this man?
He's still pending trial.
Incarcerated? He's free, I take it.
I think he's out on bond, Your Honor, I believe.
Going to school?
I don't know. I have no idea. I want to say one more thing, that at the close of the year, this newspaper published the story of the year and published the story of this boy's troubles again and called it the story of the year and printed his name again while this case was pending. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted.